This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week, we're covering Gary Ray Bowles.
We forgot to look it up.
It's Bowles.
Yeah. I have a friend who spells her name like that, and it's Bowles.
I like Bowles better.
That's so inappropriate.
But he's a serial killer, so, like, does it matter if I make fun of his last name?
No.
See?
But he's dead.
So?
Okay. Fair enough. He also killed a bunch of people. So.
Yeah, like, I don't really feel that bad. But before we get into all of that good stuff, sorry there is no mini-sode this week, but we're brewing up something real cool, real fun, real special for you for next week.
Yep.
I'm just like staring at Sarah and she's like, wow, who
she's
are you?
She's looking at me in the eyes.
I don't know where else to look because it feels weird to just look forward and be like, but I'm talking to Sarah, but I'm maintaining too much eye contact is the issue.
And you are making a lot of hand gestures.
I love making lots of hand gestures all the time. I'm very Italian without having any Italian in me.
You're very Mexican. Do they talk with their hands?
None of my family does.
Okay.
So
I don't know.
Maybe. But my family is also like the whitest Mexicans you'll ever meet. So
fair enough. I said fair enough at least 10 times in this podcast.
It's
already.
Okay. What did I say twice in 1 hour that I've never said before today? Oh, to stoked the to the max. Yes. I've never said that before, and I've said it twice within the past hour. So something is going on. It's because the holidays are happening. Yeah. We're just
and
already
Morgan
going crazy.
Is stoked to the max.
I am always stoked to the
also,
max.
Also, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Oh,
yesterday,
yeah.
But
happy Thanksgiving. I hope you did whatever you do on Thanksgiving that makes you happy.
Right. And if you don't celebrate it or you're in a different country, then happy. You should just eat food anyways today.
Yeah. Happy Thursday.
Exactly. We hope you had a good Thursday.
We hope
yesterday.
You had a wonderful Thursday. But Jesus Christ, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
So I've been binging it for like a minute and talking about it literally nonstop.
Okay.
And, like, literally talked about it at the gym today.
Wow, I feel so bad because
no,
I don't remember.
You're going to be like, oh, but I haven't had it as my binge.
Okay.
And so the reason we started this podcast was because we've listened to a bunch of other true crime podcasts we love. And I found one that I am obsessed with.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's called Morbid.
Okay, yes. I do recall.
Yes. And I've like been listening to it nonstop, and it's two hosts. Mm-hmm. And they're related. They call each other sisters, but there's some shit that goes on there.
Okay.
But it's Ash and Elena, and Ash is a hairstylist and Elena is an autopsy technician. And I love their dynamic.
Yeah.
And like, they kind of remind me of us, but like much better than us.
Same.
But they've been doing it longer and
right.
Whatever. But like, I can relate. And they also do mini-sodes
oh,
where like
cool.
They don't tell each other, but they don't do reviews. They just tell like a smaller true crime story that wouldn't have enough
like
information.
Like a full-length episode?
Yeah, as a full-length one.
That's a good idea.
Right?
Steals their idea. Just kidding.
But yeah, it's really good and you have to listen to it.
I know. I really need to and you keep telling me to. But I'm caught up on campaign 2 of Critical Role, so I've kind of slowed down on binging the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've been watching like, I watched half an episode maybe today at work, and then the rest of the day I listened to podcasts. So I'm catching up on all of my podcasts first.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then I want to like start. I'm very weird and I have to be fully caught up on everything before mm-hmm. I can start anything new. So
I know. And like, I feel like we do this binge every week, but there's like the three or four podcasts that the two of us have been binging since before we started this that we listen to every week that we just haven't mentioned.
Well, yeah, because we binge them every week. So it's like, what else are we doing in
exactly.
our lives, you know?
What are you binging?
I am binging End of the Fucking World season 2 just came out. And it's a show on Netflix. And I love this show
Sounds familiar.
I think I've talked to you about it before, and I could have sworn I talked about season 1 as a binge, but it's not in our fancy spreadsheet, so I don't know, but I guess I haven't talked
about it. I have never heard you talk about it before, so...
You just said it sounds familiar.
But, like, the show in general.
Gosh, Sarah, why are we talking like that?
I hate it.
But it's a show about, like, two teenagers who... are both, like, weird social outcasts, and they, like, get together. And the kid, like, the boy, he, like, it starts out with him, like, blah, blah, blah. And I've always wanted to kill somebody. And, like, the story is him thinking he wants to murder this girl. Like, he's falling in love with her but wants to kill her. And then they end up, like, spoiler alert, like... getting into shit together. I wasn't a spoiler alert, actually, because I decided I'm not going to ruin the show for you and be that asshole. But season 2 just came out, and Taylor and I watched like the first 3 or 4 episodes in one night because we were like, eh, we just want to put something on. And then we ended up watching like 4 episodes.
Yeah.
So it's really good. It's like an English television show. Okay. So it's like very dry humor and everything, but it's super good, and it's like kind of true crime related.
Nice. Yeah. We both have kind of true crime stuff.
Yeah, it mostly is that way because we love true crime so much.
You're not wrong.
But should we just like get into our story now?
I suppose so.
Okay. So like I said, this week we are going to cover Gary Ray Bowles. I'll say it correctly.
Bowels. I hated that.
I'm gonna fucking call him Bowels at some point because that's how I think his name should be said, because he's a bowel
trash
of a person. But he was an American serial killer who was actually executed very recently in 2019 for the murders of 6 men in 1994 that occurred over the span of 8 months. And he is sometimes referred to as the I-95 killer, since most of his victims live close to the Interstate 95 highway.
And he, like, traveled.
Yeah. And he's also, like, kind of a Florida criminal, because he also did crimes in Florida, but he did them in other states, too.
Yeah. But he, like, he did over half of them in Florida.
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to 1962 when he was born. And he was born on January 25th in Clifton Forge, Virginia. What's their slogan? Where lovers go or something?
Something. Where lovers meet. Something weird. Something about lovers, which is very uncomfortable.
It is.
And I was explained why it's that, but I don't recall why. God damn it. This is why editing takes so long.
Virginia is for lovers.
Virginia is for lovers. Lovers meet here. We're so fucking dumb sometimes. Holy shit. Right out of the gate, we were dumb too. Like, it was the first sentence in.
That's my fault. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, because I was dumb too.
Okay. So, his parents were William Franklin Bowles, who he went by Frank. Morgan is just dying.
So I read it as bowels every time, and it's not funny. I'm okay. Such a boy sometimes. It's
bowels
so stupid.
Is spelled E-L-S.
I know how bowels is spelled, Sarah. I know. But bowls also isn't fucking spelled like that either.
Oh, God. So, okay. Back to the story.
I'm like, damn, we should just restart.
No, this is good.
This we haven't even content. Been drinking is the thing. This is just us right now.
This is quality content. So his parents, which I'm assuming met in Virginia, which is made for lovers.
Correct.
There, I used it in a sentence.
You almost just knocked your mic over, too. We're in rare form tonight. We're both happy.
It usually never happens this way. So, his parents were Frank and Francis. How about that? Yes. He was the second child born to them, and he had an older brother, which I tried so hard to find his brother's name. Couldn't.
Yeah.
Oh, well. His father worked as a coal miner and ended up dying on July 22nd, 1961, of black lung disease from being a coal miner. And he died 6 months before Gary was born.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
That is sad.
But his mother, Frances, remarried several times after Frank's death. Gary said that he had a good early childhood until the ages of 7 or 8, when he started to be physically abused by his first stepfather. Gary's mother admitted that her husband was violent with the boys and would often beat them with his fists or with his belt. Whenever Frances would step in to try and protect the boys, she too would become the subject of the abuse. So Frances divorced this man and got remarried to a guy named Chet. Which is a terrible fucking name. I'm sorry if your name is Chet, but it's a douchey name.
Yeah, it's not a great name. I actually know a couple through like my family whose names are Wes and Chess. Isn't that so upsetting?
That is upsetting.
I hope they never listen to this.
Right?
I doubt they ever would, but like...
But what I want to know is like, I feel like Chet has to be short for something because you can't just... Like, Chet isn't a name that you give to a baby.
Chetwick.
Like, I mean, Chadwick is a popular name nowadays, so I mean, I guess.
Yeah, that's... Chetwick is just another step. It is a terrible name. It is.
So Chet was also a terrible guy. And
if your name... I'm just kidding. I'm not going to generalize all Chets.
There may be one good one. It's just like...
Just get a fucking series of emails from people named Chet who are like, fuck you, I'm great.
But he was a terrible person, so I'm allowed to hate him. Because this marriage was just as violent as the last. He was an alcoholic and was known to burst into violent rages when he had been drinking. During this rages, he would beat Gary, his brother, and their mother. And his mother was hospitalized several times at the hands of Chet. Which is like, I don't care if you're married to someone, but if they hospitalize you more than one time, even one time, but more than one time, fucking press charges.
I know. And it's so hard because like, you can press charges and then go and retract them when your person you're with threatens you again and things like that. But it is like if you press charges, there's that paper trail and we can like help you. But it's hard.
Yeah. Especially like when this was in the
60s. Yeah. In the 60s, like you could fucking beat your wife and be like, thank you, ma'am.
Right? Like, so... In order to escape this unhappy life, Gary began drinking, smoking weed, and huffing paint and glue at the age of 10 or 11.
That's pretty young.
That's way too young. And he ended up dropping out of school in the 8th grade. Also way too young.
Yeah.
When Gary was 13, he and his brother had enough of the abuse from Chet and fought back against him. The boys severely beat Chet and smashed his face with a rock, almost killing him. When his mother decided to stay in the marriage after this, Gary was so frustrated and decided to leave home and he began to live on the streets. While Gary lived on the streets, he traveled around to other states, living in Illinois, Missouri, Louisiana, and eventually making his way down to Florida.
They always do.
Well, he's a Florida man through and through.
Gary had his first encounter with the law when he was arrested on marijuana charges at 17, smoking that devil's lettuce.
Right?
Gary was able to provide for himself financially through his teenage years and adulthood by prostituting himself out to men. Though he never made enough money to keep a secure residence, so he remained homeless for many years. It was just like... To get by any extra money to buy food.
Couch surfed.
Yeah. Apparently, though, although he was always, like, having sex with men, Gary was not gay, and he only used these sexual encounters with men for money. He also refused to have intercourse with them and would only go as far as oral sex, and it was usually performed on him.
Which, like, not a bad gig.
Right? Getting paid for that?
Yeah.
Thomas Youngman, a Daytona Beach detective, reported asking him a question about being gay, and when Gary said he was not, Youngman asked him, "What do you describe yourself as?" And Gary responded saying, "A hustler." Youngman said he'd befriend these old guys and have sexual relations with them, but I think they performed on him. He said he did not perform on them. Gary considered himself to be a heterosexual and had several relationships with women as an adult. He actually lived with several of these girlfriends too, but they often never worked out because they were usually violent in nature. One of Gary's relationships were particularly violent. In his early 20s, Gary lived with a woman named Wesley in Tampa, Florida. The first time I saw that, because there's Wesley Chapel, mm-hmm. I was like, this is a confusing sentence to read. In June of 1982, Gary attacked her, beating and sexually assaulting her. Wesley received fingerprint-like bruising around her neck, suggesting that she had been choked. One of her breasts had been badly bitten, and her face was severely beaten to the point that both of her eyes were swollen shut. She also received lacerations to her vagina and rectum. The bathroom and bedroom of Wesley's house contained a significant amount of blood. The blood spatter on the walls reached about 5 feet above the bed, which is just like
a lot.
There's a lot of force going into those hitting, like mm-hmm. beatings if you're doing that much blood splatter. One of the detectives on the scene was quoted as saying, "I've seen better looking bodies in an autopsy," referring to the victim, which is also like, chill the fuck out, guy. Like, maybe don't say that. Gary was sentenced to 6 years in prison for the attack, but ended up serving less than 3 years because that's how it goes.
Exactly. This guy never spends his full sentences.
No. Except for his final one.
Yep. I mean, did he? He didn't really serve a life sentence. I guess he did.
Since he got death penalty. Life. So, after his release from prison in the summer of 1991, he was convicted again of an unarmed robbery in Volusia County, Florida. He pushed an elderly woman down and stole her purse before running away, which just, like, is such a little bitch move.
I know. It's, like, the lowest form of robbery.
Yeah. Like, don't be an asshole. And so he was sentenced to 4 more years in prison, but again, was released in December of 1993.
So now we're going to go into his hardcore crimes.
Hardcore.
The murders. So, the first murder was of John Hardy Roberts. John's body was found on March 15th, 1994, at his home in Daytona Beach, Florida, after no one had heard from him in over 24 hours. A friend stopped by his house. When he discovered that all of the doors and windows were locked, he broke in through the back kitchen door to discover the scene and John's body. Which, like, if I hadn't heard from someone in 24 hours, I wouldn't break into their house.
Yeah.
Like, I would call the cops or something, or call around. Right. But I wouldn't just, like, go and, like, bust down a door.
Maybe the friend and him, like, just talked constantly, and so he was super concerned.
Maybe.
I have no idea. It is kind of an extra reaction.
A little bit. John Roberts was 59 years old at the time of his death and worked as an insurance salesman. This man had offered Bowles a temporary place to live, and they became roommates for a short period of time. And it is believed that Gary and John engaged in sexual activities.
He kind of, like, I feel like he always lured men into thinking that there was gonna be a relationship between them so mm-hmm. he could live with them.
Exactly. A few weeks into Gary's stay, the two had an argument, and John kicked Gary out. And this sent Gary into one of his rages.
Yeah.
The argument was over Bowles' ex-girlfriend, who he was obsessed with and kept trying to win back. John gave Gary an ultimatum, saying, "Make up your mind, it's me or her," which is further evidence to be like, I think they were kind of in a relationship.
Yeah.
A violent struggle then happened that resulted in the death of John. John's body was found on the living room floor of his house. He had been strangled and beaten and had a rag shoved down his throat. His head showed signs of severe trauma, and one of his fingers was almost severed off. In the room, there was blood splattered everywhere, and a glass table and lamp were shattered all over the floor. Police reported that there was a stream of blood that ran from John's head into the nearby bedroom.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. After he was caught, Gary told police that he began beating John over the head with the lamp repeatedly. When John tried to escape, he fell over the glass table where Gary strangled him until he died. Robert's car and wallet containing his credit cards were missing, and police had spoken to a neighbor the day after John was murdered, and she reported seeing a man in his 30s casually standing outside of John's home, drinking from a coffee mug. When she walked outside a couple minutes later, the man was gone. And Gary was considered a suspect pretty fast in this murder.
Yeah.
Because he's fucking dumb. His fingerprints were everywhere. His probation papers were found at the house.
Which is, like, the dumbest.
Yeah. He had made many calls to his friends and family from John's house. And a camera from an ATM showed a smiling Gary Bowles trying to retrieve money from John's bank card, which he failed to get any of the money out, but he did end up using John's credit cards at various convenience stores and gas stations. And then John's car was eventually found abandoned in Georgia.
Yes. So he immediately, like, went on the run.
Yeah, he was like, peace.
The next victim is David Jarman, who was only 38 years old when he was killed. After killing John Roberts, Gary then made his way to Wheaton, Maryland, where he was seen at a gay bar with David, who was a loan officer. On April 14th, 1994, a maintenance man discovered the decomposing body of David in the basement of his home. Again, he was badly beaten and had been strangled with a sex toy shoved down his throat. David's credit cards and car were also missing. His credit cards had been used after his death, and the signature used with them matched Gary's signature.
Another stupid fucking move.
He's literally the dumbest fucking criminal, but he still murdered six people. He had used one of David's car to book a motel room in Baltimore, Maryland. After he murdered David, Gary then made his way back down south. So the next person who was a victim is Milton Bradley, who was 72 years old.
But he's not the game board guy. Because I read that and I was like, the what? Fuck?
This attack occurred in Savannah, Georgia, only a few weeks later. Milton had been seen with a man matching Gary's description a few days before he was murdered at a local gay bar named Faces.
I love the name of these bars.
They are very good. Many of the men at local gay bars in Savannah said that Gary had approached them, but they all declined his offers of sex, saying that they were creeped out by him. Because he's kind of a creepy guy in the pictures.
And really aggressive.
Yeah. They also told police that they had seen Gary with Milton before his death. Milton's decomposing body was found on May 5th, 1994, behind a shed on a golf course near his home. A medical examination determined that Milton had been severely beaten before being strangled. Like the two murders before his, he had stuff shoved in his mouth before being strangled and had been robbed. His mouth was filled with dirt and leaves that blocked his windpipe. He had been bludgeoned with an old toilet. The lid and the tank of the toilet were broken. What a weird weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Milton's pockets had been turned inside out. And Detective John Best, who was on the scene, said, "It was a violent crime scene. It was overkill." And we'll see this in, like, every crime. The detectives are like, it was just such an overkill way to kill someone.
Like, he had such a specific way. Like, he just... Everyone he beat over the head and then shove shit down their throats.
Yeah, like, to, like, strangle them.
Yeah.
Very weird. Police had also discovered a palm print later found belonging to Gary at the scene. Like, he was not clever at all. He left, evidence at every scene. People were shocked by the murder, as Milton was a well-known citizen and an honored World War II veteran. According to Bob Morris of the Savannah Morning News, Milton was a quiet and gentle man who was extremely generous. He had received a massive shrapnel injury to his head during the war, which later required him to have a lobotomy. This procedure had left Milton with a slight mental impairment, which people say made him a more vulnerable victim to Gary. And that's just so shitty. Like,
it is.
Don't take advantage of people.
So the next person, I searched and searched and searched.
Me too.
And could not find anything on him.
I think this is like the only thing known about him.
So his name was Alverson Carter Jr. And he was 47 years old. And he was from Atlanta, Georgia. And he was found stabbed to death on May 13th, 1994, a few days after he'd been killed. So he wasn't found for a couple days.
Right.
And then this happened 8 days after Milton's death.
And that's all we know, unfortunately. Yeah.
But he did end up confessing.
Yeah.
So the next victim is Albert Elsie Morris, who was 37. And, like, I just want to point out, at this time, through all these murders, Gary Ray Bowles was 32.
Yeah.
So, like, he had a large range of, like, people close to his age to people much, much older.
Right.
So, on May 19th, 6 days later, Morris's body was found discovered in his trailer in Hillard, Florida, which is in Nassau County, about 30 minutes northwest of Jacksonville. And his body was discovered by his parents.
That's so sad.
It is. Like, that's the worst. I feel like your parents or your kids are the worst people to discover your body. The scene was strikingly similar to the one of John Roberts' death in Daytona Beach 2 months earlier. Gary and Albert were seen together at a gay bar in Jacksonville, where Albert had invited Gary to stay with him in his home for a few days. Gary had been staying there for about 2 weeks before murdering Albert. And the night before Albert was murdered, the two were actually seen together arguing at a bar before they got kicked out.
Right.
It appeared as though Albert had fought back against Gary during the struggle, which a lot of these people fought back.
Yeah.
But Albert was beaten using a marble dish and then shot in the chest. A towel was also tied around his head and then stuffed into his mouth. While in Albert's house, Gary found something that helped him remain a fugitive on the run.
Yeah.
Gary found a driver's license, social security card, and a birth certificate belonging to a man named Timothy Whitfield.
Super weird to me, personally.
Right? So the relationship between Albert Morris and Timothy Whitfield is unclear, so it's unknown why these documents were in his house.
Like, did Albert kill Timothy Whitfield and then someone killed Albert?
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Conspiracy theory.
Right? Or even, like, I wonder if it was just, like a
alias?
Separate identity that
he
had already had.
Maybe. Who's to say?
Right? But Gary used these documents and stole Timothy's identity and used that name as his alias for the next 4 months. Gary was actually arrested and put in jail for minor infractions twice during this time, but both times he was booked under the fake name.
I hate it so much.
I know. He was literally in fucking jail. And one of the times, he was arrested for a crime that the real Timothy Whitfield committed, but he didn't want to blow his cover, so he quietly served the time in jail, which happened to only be 5 days, and was released and just put back out into the world because no one knew how to check shit.
Yeah.
Apparently.
That's like the funniest fucking thing to
me. Right.
So his final murder occurred to Walker Jamel Hinton, who also went by Jay. On Friday, November 18th, 1994, Belinda, who is Jay's sister, was celebrating her birthday with her fiance, William. Also, Belinda is not a good name either.
It's not. It's like naming a child, like a tiny baby, Belinda or Linda even, or Carol, or like old people. Ethel.
I kind of like Ethel. Ethel's coming back.
It is.
Okay. So Belinda, it was her birthday and she hadn't heard from her brother. So she spent her birthday being concerned for her brother because he had not contacted her for her birthday like he had promised to do days before. The next day, William, the fiance, went to Jay's mobile home in Duval, Florida to check on him. When he arrived at the house, all of the lights were on, no one was home, and all of the doors were locked. Jay's Cadillac was gone, so he left. He just assumed no one was home. Like, kind of weird that all the lights are on, but whatever. Oh, well,
yeah. Sometimes you forget to turn off the lights.
Yeah. He returned several times over the next 2 days with Belinda, but there was still no luck on locating Jay. They had also learned that Jay had not been to work in the past 2 days, so they started to get increasingly worried. They then decided that they needed to take a look inside of the residence. That Sunday, they returned to the house, and William managed to get inside by breaking a back window into the trailer.
Okay, at this point, I understand breaking in.
Yeah, I feel like everyone breaks in because they don't want to trouble the police.
And it's like they're the best people to do this.
But yeah, like when the downstairs neighbor's like front door was open, I was like, Taylor, do not fucking go in there. You are going to wait for the police to get here. Yeah. Like, it just worries me so much. And also, I don't want to be the one to find someone like that. So I'd rather the police do
it. I don't want to find a mannequin.
Yeah, honestly. Upon entering the home, William was melt. Why can't I ever
speak? I'm the one who can actually speak this time.
Upon entering the home, William was met with a foul odor emanating from the home. When he made his way to the bedroom, it was disheveled and things were thrown everywhere. He eventually made his way to the bathroom, where he noticed a large pile of blankets piled up on the floor, which appeared to be covering something. William went to touch the mound of blankets, which was hard to the touch. And when he started removing them, he found the beaten and decomposing body of Jay. He and Belinda immediately went to the neighbor's house to call the police. Police then discovered that Jay's wallet and personal papers were thrown onto the bed. Laying beside the bed was a pile of sheets and a large stepping stone covered in blood. They assumed that the stepping stone had been taken from the front lawn and it had weighed about 40 pounds.
Which is a just big for a stone.
Yeah, like that's a big ass fucking rock to just carry into the house. A large concentration of blood was found in the bathroom where the body had been found. There were a numerous amount of liquor bottles and beer cans thrown about the home, and police also found a receipt with the name Timothy Whitfield on it in the home, and the victim's car and watch had been stolen. So like every other crime.
Exactly.
A medical examination showed that Jay's forehead and cheekbone had been crushed, presumably from the stepping stone. He also had 5 broken ribs and abrasions on his arm and leg. This made the police believe that Jay had fought back against his attacker. The medical examination also concluded that Jay had been dead for at least 3 days before he was found. They also said that even though the damage to his face had been severe, that had not been the cause of death, like the other crimes. Jay had died from asphyxiation. Why can neither of us say that word anymore?
It's a hard word.
I used to be able to say it, though, before anyone ever recorded me. So he died from asphyxiation of a rag and toilet paper that were shoved down his throat after being strangled. The man who is Jay's house guest, Timothy Whitfield, was the police's prime suspect, who was really Gary Ray Bowles.
Bowles.
Leading up to Jay's death, as told by Gary after he was arrested, and also as told by Ginger.
Wow.
That was
throwing it
not
a funny
joke. It wasn't relatable.
It took me a second, but you're just throwing it. I think you're throwing it too far back. Who knows?
It's not that far back.
It was like early 2000s, but it wasn't a big, big show, you know?
No, but I loved that show.
Ginger was good.
It was my fave for a while. So Gary and Jay had met at a gay bar in Jacksonville in early November 1994, and the two likely engaged in a gay relationship.
Homosexual activity.
A few days after they had met, Jay was moving into a new trailer, and Gary helped him move and was invited to stay with Jay temporarily. All of these people are nice as hell because I don't even like when my friends stay with me temporarily.
Right?
Like, this is my home. Gary lived with Jay for about 2 weeks.
And, like, all of these people, he only lived with them for, like, 2 weeks before snapping and killing them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if you saw this pattern, just leave before the 2 week mark,
right.
My guy.
He loved the pattern, though.
Oh, yeah.
During this time, Gary was asked to leave after the two had an argument over the way that Gary was treating one of Jay's female friends. But the two quickly reconciled and Gary moved back in. And, like, I don't believe that Gary was fully straight.
No. Because, well, everyone's a little gay.
Well, right. But, like, the way he gets so upset by the female friends in these men's mm-hmm. lives, or, like, ex-girlfriends, like, there has to be some type of emotional connection there.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like maybe he wasn't sexually attracted to men, but, like, he could still at least emotionally connect to them. Because why would you get upset that they had female friends if you weren't a little gay?
Exactly.
Like, just feels weird. On the day of the murder, Gary was hanging out at the trailer with a friend named Rick. I don't know why, but name Rick is just so silly to me. While Jay was at work, Gary and Rick spent the day drinking beer and smoking weed.
I don't know how to say weed like a cool person.
That's why I said it like that, because dumb
all
the time.
Do you say weed or pot or marijuana? How do the kids say this?
Anytime I talk about it, Taylor tells me I sound like a narc. He's like, you just sound like such a narc when you talk about anything
smoking
weed
that
related.
Mary Jane.
Yeah, like, let's hit that reefer, kids.
But I feel like if we were cooler, all of this would sound so much better. We'd be able to say whatever the fuck we wanted.
That's true. But we're not cool, so.
Exactly.
We just got to keep on dreaming.
It's part of our charm.
They continued partying when Jay came home and he joined in. At around 8 p.m., the three drove to the train station so Rick could take the train home. While they were waiting for the train, they drank some more beer and smoked some more pot. So they were just fucking wild and crazy.
As the kids say, they were wildin'.
They were getting lit.
Fam.
Sorry,
I'm done.
When Rick left, he said that Gary was very inebriated, but was still coherent. Once they returned to the trailer, Gary drank 6 more beers, and Jay went into his room to go to bed. He's like, you said I was coherent? Let's fucking wreck that, bro. Gary said that during the evening, something inside of him snapped. Probably the amount of beer you fucking drank tonight, my guy.
Beer is a downer, guys. Alcohol is a downer.
And weed, like, mixing that together, you're just gonna be, like,
fucked up.
In a bad place. Some people can get crossfaded, but not most people. He went outside and grabbed the 40-pound stepping stone and carried it inside, placing it on the table. He said that at this time, he took a moment to think about what he was about to do, but proceeded on carrying the stone into Jay's bedroom.
I can just imagine him, like, stumbling inside and just it loudly hitting the table and just being like, so should I drop it on him? Should I curb stomp him?
Yeah, he's just, like, planning it.
Yeah, and then just like, oh, I don't know, I'll figure it out, and then walk back with it.
Also, like, it has to be very deliberate because you're carrying a 40-pound stone. Like, you're committing at that point if you're carrying a stone that big.
Yeah, because I feel like when I carry, like, when we carry a 40-pound dumbbell at the gym, it's heavy, but it's, like, compact. I feel like 40 pounds in stone has to be fucking huge.
Yeah, you're, like, carrying it with both arms and struggling.
I feel like it's, like, the size of, like, a fucking box or something.
Right. Yeah, it's not comfortable to carry.
No.
You have to commit to carrying it. While Jay was sleeping, Gary dropped the stepping stone onto his head. Jay suddenly awoke, but was stunned by the blow. A brief struggle then ensued, and Jay started to fight back, but Gary was ready and stuffed a rag and toilet paper into his mouth before strangling him. Gary then took Jay's car and drove around for a bit before returning to the trailer. He stayed in the trailer for 2 more days while Jay was decomposing in the other room.
Which means that he must have been in the house when they were trying to get in.
Which is real creepy. Mm-hmm. I hate stories like that. During this time, he even brought a homeless female back to the trailer for a while before returning her to the place he had found her. It is stated that she didn't know about the body in the other room while she was there. And I'm like, it had to have smelled by then, right?
Like, it had to have started smelling. Unless, like, he had the bedroom door closed and, like, a towel underneath
Maybe.
It or something.
I just feel like it would have to smell, but I don't know.
But, I mean, if she's homeless and hasn't showered in a while, she smells herself. Like,
Jesus Christ. Homeless shaming?
I'm just
kidding.
Okay, if you're homeless, half the time you haven't showered in a minute.
Yeah.
I smell bad after 24 hours of not showering.
It's true. So do I. Jay's car was found abandoned several days before Gary was arrested, and during this time, Gary was hiding out at a Jacksonville Beach hotel.
All right, we're getting down to business now. This is when the police get involved.
Noice.
So, police had a suspect for all of these crimes, as Gary Ray Bowles was not slicked.
Yes.
Slicked. Was not slick. And left fingerprints, paperwork, and gave his name to the gay bars around town.
Yeah, he just really wanted everyone to know he was killing people.
Exactly. So he then appeared on an episode of America's Most Wanted in that November. I can't remember, but I read that it was either like 2 days before or 2 days after he killed Jay Hinton.
Okay.
At the time the episode of America's Most Wanted aired, Bowles was living with several people who called the police when they saw his picture on TV.
Yeah. This next part pisses me off.
I know.
So badly.
But when the police came, they looked at him, and Bowles looked different. He had a tan and a mustache, so police thought he didn't look enough like the man and just let him go.
Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
The worst part is that on the show America's Most Wanted, they talked about his identifying features.
Yes.
And the police failed to check any of these, including 3 tattoos and old knifing scars.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just sometimes a lot of people have knifing scars.
Right.
Apparently.
Yeah. Casual.
Right. On November 19th, 1994. Gary was put on the FBI's list of the country's 10 most wanted for his 4 known victims. And on the morning of November 22nd, Gary was at a day laborer's office trying to find some work and noticed police walk into the office. And I don't know how the police found the tip that he was there or whatever.
Yeah.
But when he noticed the police, he tried hiding out in the bathroom, but eventually came out and was taken to the station for questioning in the murder of Jay Hinton. At this time, Gary was still living under the alias of Timothy Whitfield. So after hours of questioning, he eventually broke down and said, quote, "Look, I'm tired of this. Do you really want to know who I am? I'm Gary Ray Bowles."
End Drops quote. Mike.
I know. I feel like he just said it hard as fuck.
Yeah.
After this, he admitted to the murder of Hinton, as well as murdering and robbing the five other men. He said that he wanted the killings to stop. During this interview, he's also quoted as saying, "I'm either getting six life sentences or the electric chair." Investigators say that if he hadn't have been caught, he would have kept on killing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. He loved it.
And later, in an interview with A&E in a series called The Killer Speaks, you know, because we have to make money off these people.
Right.
He's
like we're trying to do.
We're telling a story, okay? In a series called The Killer Speaks, he's quoted as saying, "I just wanted to kill as many people as I could before they caught me." But, like, he put all of his shit out to be caught.
Yeah, he wasn't trying, dumbass.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to be secretive. And he seemed as though he had no remorse for the men that he killed, saying he believed they deserved it.
You know, because he hates gay people that much.
Exactly. And this is why.
Yeah.
It came out during the trial that the reason he murdered was due to that girlfriend that he was obsessed with.
Yeah.
A while back. Yeah. And she had gotten pregnant.
Right.
She found out that he was a sex worker and decided to get an abortion. This enraged Bowles, and he said that he blamed gay men for his abortion.
I just think that is the weirdest logic ever.
Yeah. And so he decided to kill them because his girlfriend had an abortion.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
There's not a circle there.
No. You tried, but you failed.
Right. But he did also blame his childhood abuse and his alcoholism for his rage.
All of these people have bad childhoods, dude, and, like, not everyone kills.
I didn't write it down, but Jay Hinton, the last guy that was murdered, his mom spoke at, like, one of the trials and was like, "I've also had a bad life, and I didn't kill anyone, so I can't feel bad for you. Yeah, sorry."
It's a fair point.
So, in May 1996, he pled guilty to the murder of Walter Hinton and received the death penalty for it. Later, in 1997, he also pled guilty to the beating and strangling of Roberts. Eventually, he was found guilty for 3 counts of murder and received the death penalty for everything in a 10-2 vote from the jurors. After being convicted of the murders in Florida, police in Georgia and Maryland had actually decided not to pursue the murder charges in those states since he had already been convicted.
Right. I get it, but I'm also like, get justice for everybody.
Exactly. Detective Best said, quote, "He just had a lot of pent-up anger. Sure, his childhood played a role, but he was an opportunist. Once he robbed and killed his first victim, it became easy for him after that."
Yeah.
And then during his sentencing hearing, prosecutor Ernie De La Renota?
Yeah.
Told the jurors, quote, "Mr. Hinton put up a heck of a fight for his life. His skull was fractured, but his brain was still intact. He attempted to live in a valiant effort."
That's a nice thing.
Yeah.
After being convicted of murder, Bowles filed an appeal to the Florida Supreme Court, saying that the court made an error in allowing the state to present evidence that he hated homosexual men.
But, like, he admitted that he hated homosexual men.
He did. But he said the court never actually proved that Bowles hated... Now it's just, like, accidentally coming out of my mouth. He said the court never actually proved that Bowles hated gay men, and therefore it should not have been a defining factor in his case. The court agreed and reversed his death sentence.
Lame.
Then, on August 27th, 1998, a new penalty phase began. He was resentenced to death on September?
Mm-hmm.
He was resentenced to death on September 7th of 1999. This time, the jurors were unanimous. He again tried to file an appeal, but did not overturn the new conviction. Detective Best, who pointed out that his violent streak began in 1982 when he violently raped and beat his ex-girlfriend, said of the sentence, It's just a sentence. I don't think he's going to be missed. Even though he's in a prison cell, he can wake up every day. His murder victims can't do that anymore.
True shit.
Yep. Bowles was put to death this year on August 22nd.
So just, what, like 3 months ago?
Yeah. And became the 99th person executed in Florida since the death penalty was reinstated in 1976. Florida executes a lot more people than most states.
Yeah, well, here we are.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who was signed into office in January, has signed two death warrants. Bowles was the second, and it was signed June 11th, 2019. Who was the other one? Do you know?
I don't.
That's okay. We'll look it up later. The court denied his 11th hour petition for a stay. His attorney said he was too intellectually disabled to be put to death, and the courts did not agree. That was never a claim before, but he made it a claim now. No family came to visit before he died, and none of the victim's family members came to speak. He also requested that no priest came to pray for him. He ate 3 cheeseburgers, French fries, and bacon as his last meal.
Which, like, not a bad meal.
No, it's not a terrible meal. He declined saying his last statement out loud before being executed, but he did leave a written statement. His written statement to the media said, "I'm sorry for all of the pain and suffering I have caused," he wrote, apologizing to the families and to his mother. "I never wanted this to be my life. You don't wake up one day and decide to become a serial killer. No one feels bad for you, man."
Right?
The execution itself proceeded with nothing unusual happening besides Bowles quietly speaking to himself beforehand, perhaps in prayer. But that's it.
So I did look up who the first person was.
Okay.
And it was Bobby Joe Long.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was a serial killer who raped and executed and murdered at least 10 women.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to cover him eventually.
Definitely.
But yeah, that was fucking Gary Ray Bowles.
He was a bowel of a human.
He was a bowel of a human. And he died earlier this year.
Yep.
That's like what most of the articles now are about, because he died so recently that when you search for him, it's like all articles about that.
I know. It was so difficult.
It was. But I liked researching that case. It was an interesting one. And
yeah, that I haven't really heard many people cover.
Yeah. Like, I've always heard of the I-95 killer, but I've never really heard anyone talk about it in detail. So exactly. It was interesting to read about and everything. But you have our Florida man story this week, correct?
I do.
Okay.
And let's be honest,
Sarah texted me about this story last night telling me how excited she was. So if it's not good, we're all going to fight her.
And let's be kidding. Honest, that's I mean. Just shut my computer because I've memorized it.
Jesus Christ, Sarah.
So this happened last week.
Okay.
In Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Okay.
And it is not a Florida man story.
Wow.
It's a Florida dog story.
Oh, shit.
So, okay. There isn't any, like, headline or anything. I'm just going to tell you the story.
Yeah.
So, basically, this black lab was in a car, and the owner stepped outside for a minute to grab something really quickly from his house, and the dog changed the gear and put the car in reverse.
Oh, my God.
So, it started going backwards, but the wheel was turned all the way, so it just started going backwards in circles. And the neighbor saw this and called the police. But the car went backwards in circles for over an hour.
What?
Before they could stop it. And the only, like, after an hour, it hit a mailbox, and that's what slowed it down so they could, like, type in the little keypad to open the door and get the and the dog literally, like, just jumped out and was like, "I just had the time of my fucking life."
Holy shit.
But it, like, no one was hurt. The only thing damaged was the mailbox. Like, okay. The dog was fine.
That's fantastic.
But he just drove for an hour in circles.
He was living his best
life.
He
was, like, he just the best black lab ever. And I thought it was a great story and it was really happy.
Yeah, that was very cute.
And I liked it. And I thought it was a good change of pace from our crazy Florida people. And we had a good boy this time.
That was very good. I like that story.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to find us on social media.
Social media.
It's very fitting for the amount that we can't speak. You can find us at Crime Binge. We'll post pictures of Gary Ray bowels and everything that we can find.
Yes.
And we also have an email. You can email us at crimebinge@gmail.com.
I was going to say, and don't forget to rate and review, leave us comments, things like that.
Do it for reals because I'll be so happy.
And
keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya. I believe in you.
Thank you. That was the support I needed.